Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mundo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mundo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mundo!
Oh, stick to my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mundo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mundo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
That's right, it's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to, the show that's going to tell you the truth about how corporate power is turning the American dream into the impossible dream for the working person, the show that rattles the left-wing limousine liberals who sit on their high horses while the working class fights their battles for them, and the show that loves to point out how the so-called professional media is selling us down the river by not reporting the news. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Avecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here.
Oh, well, Joe.
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about this show. But first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec at bellsouth.net.
Okay, and I want to thank all my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. Also my friends at rantradio.com. Tuning in on Mondays and Thursdays, my friends at WNYmedia.net out of upstate New York, and everyone listening in from the blog or from their iPods.
And it's Fitzmas. Yesterday was the day that Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald released the first of his charges against Bush administration officials. And the first casualty was Ice Scooter Libby. Scooter, who is Dick Cheney's chief aide, I guess, kind of sort of the chief of staff of the vice president. He was indicted on several counts, perjury, obstruction of justice, all that sort of thing. Of course, now he's got to have a trial and all that stuff. But I was watching the blogs. I was reading all the different sites and listening to everybody, you know, wait in anticipation. Oh, they're going to get it now. And, of course, you know, the way things are going to pan out, the way I see it maybe, is that Libby's going to be like the fall guy for the whole thing. It was all Libby's fault. Everything that happened. You know, it says Libby, Libby, Libby on the indictment. And we can all rest easy. The world is safe from democracy again. It's really, really rather sickening, actually, to see that. Because you know, it's an attitude that gets us in trouble more often than not, because it still makes us forget that overall things are still going their way. You know, we've seen it before with this administration and just the ideology of the Republicans in particular and the right wing in general, that the amount of personal responsibility you take varies inversely with the amount of money and power you have. That is, the more money and power you have, the less likely you are to take personal responsibility for your actions. You know, what they mean by that, they're calling it the criminalization of politics, which they mean to say, hey, we're setting policy. We shouldn't have to be worried about whether we're going to get arrested if we're setting a policy that goes against, you know, what somebody else wants. And, of course, that's pure BS. I mean, you know, any kind of policy, first of all, has to be within the framework of the law to begin with. You can't make a policy, you want to kill all the gay people. That's not policy. That's a crime. Just because it's being committed by people in power doesn't make it any less of a crime. And when they go outside of the law to do something, we've got the right to stop them. from doing that and to prosecute them if they get caught doing it after the fact. We've got that right. Of course, they don't see it like that. You know, these are the motor of the world. These are betters. That's how they see it. They have, by virtue of their wealth and privilege, however they may have attained it, they have the right, in their belief, to make the world in their own image. And it's not for us to oppose or question them. Hey, if they want Iraq, our job is to go and get it for them. A few soldiers die, tens of thousands of innocent Iraqis die, doesn't matter. Because what's important to them is they get what they want. And how they're treating anybody who disagrees with them is proof positive of that. Look at how they treated Joe Wilson, which is what got them into this mess in the first place. Hang on a second here. A little water. No soda or anything today. I don't drink. For those of you who have ever thought about asking me that, I don't drink. I never have and I never will. Not because of any moral thing against it. I just don't like the taste of it. You'd sooner catch me eating Brussels sprouts. Where the hell was I? Yeah, the friggin' motor of the world. You know, these guys really do believe that they're above all of that. These are, you know, we're the go-getters. We're the guys that do things. We're the ones that make the world run. And it's just baloney. It's just BS. They see themselves that way because they live in that kind of world. But there's a lot of other people out there that live in this world, too, and we're not all that competitive. I'm certainly not, which is why I never have any damn money. And just because they managed to fool or scare so many of us into following along with what they're going on, it doesn't really change anything. The fact of the matter is, as I see it, and until I see some evidence otherwise, they're still pretty much going to get away from it. You know, Brownie's still in charge of FEMA. He hasn't left his job. They gave him like 30 days to get out. Now they just gave him another 30 days. So, you know, what is that old joke? The doctor told me I only had 30 days to live. I told him I couldn't pay the bill. He gave me another 30 days. And naturally, the blogs are all over the Fitzmiss and all that stuff, as I mentioned before. And a few of them are openly gloating. But, you know, I'm still skeptical, and I'm going to stay that way until I see these guys behind bars or just removed from power at the very least and some level of sanity interject itself back into our public discourse, which I really rarely see. The blogosphere is the best place for it, but unfortunately, like with anything else that's open up to the general public, you're always going to get the little sniping and infighting and stuff like that. You know, I make the occasional post on Daily Coast, and you would think that people after a while would, you know, see them, I post there and read them, because I'm a pretty damn good writer, in my opinion. But I don't have really titillating lead-ins, and I'm not all about, oh, they're going to get it now. So people just basically tend to ignore my stuff. And I grant you, some of the stuff I write is a little pessimistic, but that's only because I understand what human nature and human history is all about. These people are all living for the moment and all that. You know, and I don't see things improving anytime soon because opposition to the status quo, whether you're talking about the smart-ass Republicans or the high-horse Democrats, the opposition to that group is still way too fragmented. I mean, they were talking about that in the protest marches recently in Washington with Cindy Sheehan. And they had all these different groups, you know, all spouting off their little special causes as if the only thing in the world that was important was their little pet cause. They don't see anything above and beyond that. And if you don't think their pet cause is the number one pet cause in the world, well, screw you. And that is their attitude. That's the scary part of it. That is their attitude. And there's too many people in this country, the ones who I'm not talking now about the people who are actively involved in watching politics from whatever ideology. I'm talking about the half of this country, the 150 million or so people who don't pay attention at all. They're still way too involved with their own concerns to pay much attention to what's happening. And just as many of them, either with them or just separately from them, think that, and not without good reason, think that very little would change if the Democrats were in power. There is a desire for change in this country. Don't get me wrong. There is a desire for it. There's a lot of people who are fed up with the way things are, but no one can seem to articulate just what direction that change should take. There was a very clear feeling of it in the early 30s with the Depression and all that stuff going on. And it was a lot simpler than people give it credit for. It was just difficult to make that leap into thinking that the government can actually do anything about it. And FDR had a very difficult task convincing people, even with all that power, that the government can be a force for good. That's why he was so strict about maintaining control of the process via the federal government, because he knew that once the money and the authority started getting down into these local areas, that it was going to be sucked up by the local corrupt politics. And he made real sure about that. But there is a desire for change in this country. And back then, it was fairly clear what they wanted to do, but now there isn't. So no one really seems to know what direction we want to take. I have an idea, and it's always been my thing. I mean, I've said it a lot of times before. We need more than just a political party. We need a movement, and we need an international movement. We need to think above and beyond what goes around our borders, because you know what? Technology has made things different. And corporate power has made things different. This is a global society, whether we want to admit it or not. The question is, what form will that future global society take? And that is up to us. And I'm not just talking about people in Mobile, Alabama, and people in Chicago, and people in New York, and people in Monterey, California. I'm talking about people in Istanbul. I'm talking about people in little towns and villages all across Europe and in Asia. You know, the people who just work for a living and don't necessarily involve themselves in big things and don't necessarily have any more ambition to just make a better life for themselves and their children. Because I'll tell you what, everybody along those lines is the same, regardless of what country you come from. And they all want basically the same things for themselves. It's the governments that tend to screw things up for people. And the governments that generally either sucker or force people to do what they want them to do rather than what's in their own best interest. I just don't see that happening anytime soon. And obviously I don't see the leaders of the world, whether they take the power by force or are elected democratically, I don't see them giving up their power without a fight. And when I say giving up power, I don't mean by force of arms, but and in some cases it may have to come down to that, but I'm talking about people who want to take control of the electoral process. And the politicians are going to do everything they can to stay in power. I mean, they're not. Why should they be concerned about their jobs so long as their jobs are safe, right? Look, people, 10,000 years of humanization have changed us very little. Wealth and power still go hand in hand, and too many people are still working way too hard, earning not enough money, basically to enrich the lives of a very few people at the top. Just saying it has to stop, like I'm doing, isn't enough. You're not going to change human nature that quickly or that easily. Now, granted, I hope something different happens, but my gut tells me it's going to take a lot more bloodshed before we finally reach a point where the kind of fundamental change I'm talking about can take place. And it's all too possible that we'll just wind up killing each other. I mean, there's certainly no end of crazy people in this world, that's for sure. I mean, all the things that have been going on with this Plame investigation, the affairs of Mr. Bush, Mr. Cheney, Karl Rove, and Scooter Libby, that they still, regardless of how powerful men they are, and they are powerful men, their problems are still only a hill of beans viewed in the greater context. Now, if they get away with what they're doing now, they'll just keep trying to do more until some other force comes along and stops them. And if they're defeated, they'll be back. I mean, other people, but the same kind of people will be back eventually. The only way we can stop that is to build a world that stops them before they can get started. And building that world means we have to start rejecting all the premises that they use to divide us. Racism, misogyny, fundamentalism. These are their weapons. They turn us against each other, so that we don't turn our energies towards the real problem, which is the people who want money and power and are more than happy to manipulate us into giving it to them. whether you're talking about Al-Qaeda warning people that if they don't, you know, put a suicide bomb in their truck, the Americans are going to get them, or whether it's an Americans who are saying that we have to attack every nation that we even think is a threat to us because of what happened at 9/11. Even though 9/11 was a wholly preventable thing, if the people in charge were less worried about their political power and more worried about the future of the country and of the world in general. Again, I've said this before, that's the difference between progressives and conservatives, or at least progressives and neocons and the hard right wing, because the hard right wing, they're only living for their lifetimes. They don't care about anything that happens past their lives. But progressives think in the very long term. Liberals think in the very long term. When they first put Social Security out there, there wasn't going to be a Social Security check issued for, what, 10 or 15 or 20 years after they first started it in the 1930s. And with elections every 4 years, you don't know where the tide's going to change. And as it turns out, it's taken them 70 years to get to the point where they can really start thinking about dismantling it. And even now they're having a very difficult time of it because there's still a lot of people who think Social Security is a good idea. That regardless of what your fortunes are financially speaking, that you have a right, as you've worked, to earn some money towards your retirement. And it's been a wildly successful program, and they hate it because it's for a couple of reasons. Number one, it goes against their ideology that government can never do anything good, which, of course, is BS. And number two, they hate the idea that there's money out there that they can't get their grubby little fingers on. So for all the Pollyannas out there, I'm sorry to burst your bubble, but the truth of the matter is that things really haven't changed that much. I mean, the Republican Congress just recently voted to cut food stamp programs all across the nation. Over $500,000 are going to be lost from food stamp programs. And it may not seem like a lot of money in the greater context, but you know, that's a lot of money as far as for people just trying to get by. And along with that is you have the cost of heating oil and stuff like that is going to go through the roof this year. So people who are going to pay a lot more for heating oil, and they're not going to have as many food stamps, perhaps, if they're on food stamps, in order to just feed themselves. So we've still got a long way to go, people. I mean, I'm happy that the indictments came down, and I'm hopeful that the charges will be expanded. Because, obviously, Libby and Rove and Cheney and Bush, you know, these were people who were working together on a great many things. So they were all either aware or approved or knew somehow, way, shape, or form, they were all tied in together. You can't get one without implicating the rest of them, as far as I'm concerned. But we'll see how it turns out. Anyway, let's take a little break. We're going to hear from our friends at BuzzFlash.com with the GOP Hypocrite of the Week. And we'll come back after that. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Papa Joe Radio Show.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. When is a double standard hypocrisy? Well, Texas GOP Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson reminded us this week. On a Sunday talk show, Hutchinson dismissed as trivial any indictments of White House officials for things like perjury and obstruction of justice as minor technicalities unworthy of prosecution. Of course, when Clinton was tried in the Senate for lying about fellatio, Hutchinson thought perjury and obstruction of justice the most serious of legal violations. Here's what she had to say then. What would we be telling Americans and those worldwide who see in America what they can only hope for in their own countries if the Senate of the United States were to conclude the president lied under oath as an element of a scheme to obstruct the due process of law, but we chose to look the other way? I cannot make that choice. I cannot look away. I vote guilty on Article 1, perjury. I vote guilty on Article 2, obstruction of justice. So, this is the quintessential Republican hypocrisy. The rule of law only applies to Democrats. Republicans are all born with a get-out-of-jail-free card. Hutchinson believes that lying about your sex life is more serious than leaking information that threatens the national security of every American. Hutchinson, a strong supporter of the Iraq War, believes that not telling the truth about fellatio is more serious than damaging the work of a CIA operative who specialized in tracking the illicit sales and transfer of weapons of mass destruction. You know, Hutchinson doesn't just deserve the BuzzFlash GOP Hypocrite of the Week. She deserves our contempt. Remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com? So many Republican hypocrites. Yeah. So little time. Catch up with you soon.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. That's joevec. That's short for Joe Vecchio, folks. That's how I do things. I'm a very simple person. When it comes to stuff like that, I'm a very simple person. You see what I'm saying? You know what I mean? Before I get into what I want to talk about, I want to mention something here real quick, because I've noticed this too. Bush's approval ratings right now are sitting in the upper 30s and lower 40s, which is pretty damn low. I mean, even for a second-term president, that's pretty damn low. And actually, generally speaking, while second-term presidents can have their problems, it's very unusual for sitting president to be rated this low at this point in his administration. And it's funny how his overall numbers can be in the low 30s or in the low 40s or high 30s, and you still get the impression from the so-called professional media that Bush is still a popular president. I mean, under normal circumstances, these would be pitchfork and torch numbers. You know, you'd be out there in the streets screaming for blood. But I think what you're seeing are people who are afraid of losing their jobs if they say the wrong thing. I think that's the only reason why somebody whose popularity is that low is still getting protected. And also, you know, people talk about the bias of the liberal media, but you know what? The people that own the news outlets are the conservatives, or in this case, the Republicans. I don't like to use the word conservative because I understand what conservatism is. And when you boil down conservatism, really all it is a love of the past. A preference for the way things were done before. More extreme conservatives are like, it was good enough for grandma, it's good enough for me, which is, of course, BS in the sense that, you know, we don't live in the past. We live in the future. And things are changed. I mean, things have changed since the revolution. Things have changed in the last 50 years. Things have changed in the last 30 years. Look at the conveyance of computers. Could anybody have done a radio show like I'm doing now 30 years ago? Of course not. Of course not. I mean, you can record it and put it on a tape maybe. And if you had a mixer, you could mix it, but mixers were much more expensive back then, and just getting the equipment made it impossible, but you had no way to disseminate it out. Granted, because I don't do any publicity, still I don't get a ton of listeners, but I get a lot more than I would have getting distributed tapes back and forth, which was the only way they can do that. And as they control the media, that's how they can control the perception of who is and isn't a popular president. But you know that Bush is not a popular president, only among those people who are really his hardcore supporters. I want to talk a little bit about the blogs that I read on a regular basis and the blogosphere in general. Most of the blogosphere, I would say a good 90% of the blogosphere, are just people writing their own personal deals. My friend Dave Merrill, he has his own. Some other friends of mine, Dr. Laura Block, she has one of her own. She's a very nice lady. You know, and it's just people just talking about their personal lives, and they have a small group of friends that read. And that's really all well and good, I guess. You know, if you don't really care who's reading it, you're just putting it kind of out as a personal diary. I kind of wonder why people put stuff out as a personal diary if they want to keep these things private. But I guess you have a private diary, and this is like more of a public journal. I suppose. Whether you're on Blogspot or LiveJournal, you have your own site, it really, really doesn't make a difference. But that's, I think, 90% of what the blogosphere really is, just people talking about their personal lives. And the political blogs are out there. And, of course, most of the blogs that I read are on the left. And I think if you look at the political blogs, you can certainly categorize them as being certain types of things. And really, there are generally, as I see it, two kinds of blogs. Well, three types of blogs. Three types of blogs. There's really not that many. One are the information warehouses. Those are guys like Atrios and the Sideshow, Avedon Carrolls. And these are ones that basically, you know, if you read Atrios' site, atrios.blogspot.com, if you read his site, and he gets a lot of hits every day, you look at it and you say, and you see that he himself does not do a whole lot of writing. He'll link to an article, post maybe a brief comment about it or a brief excerpt from it, and, you know, basically send people there. And that's what he does. And Avedon Carroll on the Sideshow, and she's based out of England, she does basically the same type of thing, although she tends to get she'll tend to make a little more comments than Atrios does. There are the community blogs like Daily Coast and My Left Wing, and these are actually my least favorite types, because you see when you get into these blogs the effect of just having a lot of people who, with their prejudices and their little cliques and all that, getting together. I mean, I get practically no attention from Daily Coast, although there were a lot of people from Coast who donated to me, and I guess there's more people that read my occasional posts on there. But generally speaking, my posts get very little or no attention on that. And I look at some of the ones that become quote unquote recommended diaries, and I'd say to myself, why the hell is this one recommended? And Democratic Underground is the same way. I mean, I used to be actually – I had several articles printed on Democratic Underground back years ago. And I really stopped writing to them along those lines. And while I don't mind making the occasional post there, and they are good people there, you still get a lot of that infighting. You got the moderate liberals against the hard left liberals, and you got the trolls, and you got this and that. And it's a big pain in the butt, to be perfectly honest. And there was a little bit of a discussion between – some of the people on My Left Wing concerning what is a community blog and who should be in control and all that stuff. You know, I've run conventions for Japanese animation, and I've run conventions for science fiction and stuff like that. And you see this kind of politics all the time and all of that. And there's always going to be people who bitch about what's pure and what isn't pure and who controls things and what you're dealing with in elections. When I was running the Japanese Animation Club of Orlando, we used to go through the whole electoral process. But it was really looking back on it, it was really probably a bad idea to have done that, because then you really put these politics into play, and then you get some idiot in charge because he's got a bunch of friends. And that's you know, one of the things that could wind up happening. When other people took over the club after I left, they decided to screw this whole election stuff. And you know what? Most of the electorate was just fine with that, Most of the club members were just fine with that. I don't recommend that as terms for the country, because that's pretty much what the Bush people do. You know, we're in charge. We're doing what we want. Screw you. Of course, if they were doing everything for everybody's benefit, if we could have been sure that all leaders were doing things for everybody's benefit, then I think we'd have a lot less problem with monarchy and with laissez-faire capitalism and all that. But the problem is that a few people up on top always want to do it for their own benefit. The last group of people on the blogosphere are the pundits or the editorialists or stuff like that. And among my favorite of those are Digby at Hullabaloo, Bill Mott at Whiskey Bar, and Juan Cole at JuanCole.com. And these guys I read regularly. They don't post as often as in Atrios or on Daily Coast or on Left Wing, where you have a lot of different people, so you always have a constant number of posts going up. But when they do post it, it's very brilliant stuff. And they do a really, really good job. I mean, Digby is such a good writer, and Bill Mott is such a good writer, and they're just a pleasure to read. There are others that are out there that I probably could read. Alterman and Josh Marshall at Talking Points Memo and all that. But, you know, I only have a certain amount of time to read these things. And I don't want to be one of those people who spends hours and hours and hours a day just reading and commenting back and forth. And when you get blogs that have comments areas, which pretty much all of them do, all the big ones anyway that I've seen. Then you really get into that, you know, hey, I got the first post, ha, ha, ha. You know, and actually, when I do post something on Atrios, I get a lot of hits from those things if I make a quick post, and I'll have a link to the Cup of Joe site. But it very rarely sticks, although I have been getting more hits lately. It's very, very strange because up until recently, I haven't had a whole lot of posts. I mean, it's been just over a month since Kathy passed away, and in that last month, I think I've made maybe 9 or 10 posts at most. I haven't counted it yet, but I really haven't made a lot. Since Kathy went, and but my numbers have gone up, so I'm not really sure what's going on. They still haven't gone up greatly. I'm still averaging just over 100 a day, but it's going from like 100 to like 130, 140, and the average has gone up to like 83, and that's like over a 2-year period. So, and there's been times when it's been really, really low, and there were a couple of times during that stretch when I was asking for donations to help me out with Kathy. With the financial situation there, and I was getting posted on some of the bigger blogs, and I was getting into thousands of hits. They mentioned me. Where did they mention me? Bart Kopp mentioned me. Bart Kopp's another. He's kind of an editorialist, but Bart is really more like a just a really rabid, you know, fuck you Republicans type of guy. He's very good at that, and I like reading his site, but he's not as good a writer, and I think he would admit that he's not as good a writer as a Digby or a Billman, but he's really not concerned with that. He's got a lot of anger and a lot of passion, and I really like what his site has to say after a while. But I want to read to you something from Avedon Carroll's The Sideshow, because this is, I thought, a really, really good point, and it's something that I think about from time to time, but I really haven't articulated it as well. And she brings it out. I'm just going to read it verbatim here. I don't generally do this, but I want to read this because I think it's such a good thing. She says, one of the other things that we don't want to admit is that really bad people can be running the U.S. government. I noticed for a while ago that I use the Napoleon Clark law. Any sufficiently advanced incompetence is indistinguishable from malice. That an awful lot of people latched onto as a way to get out of having to acknowledge the possibility that it might actually be malice. The point is that you can't tell. And the reason you can't tell is that both are possible. But look, if a few bad apples can be at the bottom, they can certainly be at the top. And it stands to reason that bad people who are interested in power would try to reach the top. And maybe it's that power corrupts, or maybe it's that the corrupt reach for power and some of them know how to get it. But it really does happen. It has happened in every nation in history, and it's silly to think that we just happen to be in a time and a place that's immune to it. So before you fall for the idea that the mess we're in can be explained away by mere incompetence, just ask yourself why it is that the mistakes this crowd always makes seem to profit them and just happen to fit in neatly with their publicly stated agenda. And don't forget that in the one thing that matters to Bush, he did put a very competent expert in place, Karl Rove. Yeah, Rove may have blown this whole Traitorgate thing, but he made sure Bush was a two-termer, and if Rove has to fall on his sword, well, that's just fine as long as Bush doesn't finally have to take responsibility for something. See, to the conservative movement, improving the lives of a majority of Americans isn't merely a pipe dream. It's a failed liberal project. It's a mistake. That's why conservatives have spent the whole of existence in the United States trying to return us to something resembling monarchy. Everything they do is aimed at strengthening those at the top and weakening the rest of us. They want your life to be hard. They like it like that. So they spend their time spreading division and hate. They twist the language and twist thought with it. They have whole cadres of people who are dedicated to that task, and they are perfectly competent about it. They write whole books for the purpose and have websites that are little more than outlets for talking points and venom. And it isn't interesting that a group who relies so heavily on this canard, the religious canard in particular, that they and they alone hold a monopoly on Christian faith, are attacking Quakers of all people for being against the war. Now, when you get a confluence of racists, power-mad loonies, warmongers, robber barons, leering frat boys, thugs, and con men together, it's not that big a stretch to suspect that maybe they really are bad people. I mean, that's what these kind of people do, become Republican. Very good words there by Avedon Carroll, and let me elaborate that a little bit. I've met a lot of conservative Christians in my life. Some of them I became kind of sort of friends with, but one of the things I've noticed is that they really need a struggle to overcome. they seem to have this great desire to have a battle and a struggle to overcome. And to them, guys like me, guys like Avedon Carroll, there's something they have to overcome. We are in opposition to them. Even though I really don't oppose them in as much of allowing them to believe what they believe. They have a perfect right to believe what they believe, and I don't have the right to stop them from believing it. But I have the right to oppose them in their efforts to make their beliefs law. They don't see it that way. They see it as their right, and the world is going to be hurt if they don't use the force of law to make other people think and act the way they do. Pardon me a moment. And they're very selective, obviously, in how they interpret that law. I believe in the rule of law, and I believe in equality. And when I talk about equality, I don't mean equal like I'm the equal of Michael Jordan in basketball. No, that's BS. I'm not his equal. I'm not his equal in that sense. I'm not the equal of an Albert Einstein or a Stephen Hawking when it comes to intellects. I understand that. I realize that. I know what my limitations are. But when I talk about equality, I talk about equality under the law, which means that if Michael Jordan gets arrested for something, he does the same crime, the same time, and has the same rights as some poor homeless guy on the street. That's what I talk about, and that's what most liberals talk about when they talk about equality under the law. But I think Avedon Carroll's right. These are just bad people. I mean, bad in the sense of being selfish, being unconcerned with the their actions and what happens because of their actions. I forget the word for that. I hate it when that happens. And their inability and their lack of desire to take responsibility. Like I said, personal responsibility is something that they use, but they don't apply it to themselves, obviously. The more money and power you have, the less personal responsibility you take. And that's a dangerous thing. And part of it, when I look at these things, part of me wonders whether they believe the things that they say, or they're really just saying something for the purpose of reaching a particular goal. Like who was that guy who wrote that book about bullshit? Saying the difference between a lie and bullshit is that a lie, people understand that there is at least a truth that they're in opposition to and they're trying to contradict. A bullshit artist just says what they say, irregardless of what the truth is. I mean, they're not intentionally trying to overcome the truth. They just don't care about it. It doesn't mix in. What's important to them is what they get based upon what they say. So, but this was a very, very good article by Avedon Carroll, and she really, I think, articulated it much better than I have and I could have. But there is a thing about that. I mean, I don't understand. Looking back at it now, I don't understand how people think that somehow because we're Americans that we're above and beyond all that. We're still human beings, and we're no different in that sense of being human beings. We're no different from the French or from the Arabs or from the Iraqis or from the Iranians or from the Chinese. The culture is different, surely, but the humanity is still there. It's still the same. And we all have different aspects of our personality, and we all allow ourselves to get misled. God, I can't think straight today. We all allow ourselves to get misled by people in power from time to time. So, anyway, let's take a little break because it's rough on me talking for 18 minutes. You know, if I ever get hired on a regular radio show, it's actually going to be a lot easier for me, even though I'm getting paid money for it, because I won't have to talk for 17 minutes at a stretch like I do here. So, anyway, let's take a little break. Sam, play us out.
The Papa Joe Radio Show will be right back.
Now, the Manager's Corner, with the thoughts and opinions of the American League's winningest manager, the Orioles' Earl Weaver. And now, to the Manager's Corner with Earl Weaver.
Well, Bill Whitehouse, Earl, from Frederick, Maryland, wants to know why you and the Orioles don't go out and get some more team speed.
Team speed, for Christ's sake. You get fucking goddamn little fleas on the fucking bases, getting picked off, trying to steal, getting thrown out, taking runs away from you. You get them big cocksuckers that can hit the fucking ball out of the ballpark, and you can't make any goddamn mistake.
Well, certainly this show is going to go down in history, Earl. Terry Elliott of Washington, D.C., wants to know why you don't use Terry Crowley as a designated hitter all the time.
Well, Terry Crowley's lucky he's in fucking baseball, for Christ's sake. He was released by the Cincinnati Reds. He was released by the fucking goddamn Atlanta Braves. We saw that Terry Crowley could sit on his fucking ass for 8 innings and enjoy watching a baseball game just like any other fan, and has the ability to get up there and break one open in the fucking ninth. So if this cocksucker would mind his own business and let me manage the fucking team, we'd be a lot better off.
Well, certainly you've made your opinions known on the fans' questions about baseball, Earl, but let's get to something else. Alice Sweet from Norfolk wants to know the best time to put in a tomato plant.
Alice Sweet ought to be worried about where the fuck her next lay's coming from rather than where her next goddamn tomato plant's coming from. If she'd get her ass out of fucking bars at night and go hustling around the goddamn street, she might get a prick stuck in her once in a while. I don't understand where these questions are coming from, Tom. That's about it from Manager's Corner. Go fuck yourself and the fuck with your show coming up next on the Baltimore Oriole Baseball fucking network.
Weaver, the great manager of the Baltimore Orioles. That cracks me up. Actually, gave you a little more time so you can have a little more time to laugh or spit out your coffee or whatever. Oh, man, that was a ride. Earl Weaver managed the Baltimore Orioles for many, many years, and he won not as many World Series as he probably deserved, kind of like the Atlanta Braves of nowadays. But his teams were always great teams. They were always in contention. And he was a very, very fiery manager, unlike the Braves manager, who was very, very laid back. He'll get out and argue, but he's not as bombastic as old Earl was. That's a classic, classic little bit, that one of the many, many things that I pick up on the Internet. You know that they have the Internet on computers now. I thought you might like to know that. That's a good bit of information to know. This is Joe Vecchio, Cup of Joe Radio Show. I'm your not-so-humble host. Voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and email address is joevec, that's V like in victory, folks, at bellsouth.net. And I'm glad you're all with me here today, especially my fans on White Rose Society, my fans at WNYmedia.net and at rantradio.com, and all you people listening on your iPods. I set that thing up a while ago, and I just kind of forgotten about it, at least as far as, you know, actually doing anything. But apparently it all works automatically, so as long as I don't have to do anything more for stuff, I'm happy. I got enough stuff to deal with as it is. Actually, I put that Earl Weaver bit on because we just had the World Series in baseball. The Chicago White Sox have ended their little streak of 80-something years of not winning a World Series. And I was, you know, happy with that because the Sox had played well all year. And they kind of had a downtime for a while because they had the division pretty much won. But the Cleveland Indians really kind of forced the issue near the end there. And actually, it might have been because of the Cleveland Indians that the White Sox got so good near the end there, because they were having some problems, and then the Indians forced them to play better baseball. So they went in on a real groove, and they just took out everybody, man. They took out the Angels, and they took out the Houston Astros, who beat my Atlanta Braves. And it's a failing of baseball, I think, to have so many playoffs. I mean, I was happy for the Astros in the terms of they're a pretty class team, and they've got good fans, and you know, they've got a really good pitching staff, but really they only played well for half a season, and they managed to squeak into the playoffs and take out the two best teams in the National League, really, the Braves and the Cardinals. And the Braves have won 14 straight divisions and have got one championship to show for it. And part of that is because the Braves are really built for, you know, the long haul. They're not really built for short series. Another part of that is you go in there and you get a team that's just hot, and you know, they win. I mean, it's worse in other sports, but it can get pretty bad in baseball. If you have a couple of good starting pitchers, you can really win. You can really take control of a very short series against a much better team in general. And there's a lot less import placed on the long season. I mean, baseball is a 162-game season. And I read an article in the New York Times about how Fox Sports, which Fox was carrying the World Series this year, and how they lost a lot of ratings because it was Chicago and Houston and because it was a four-game sweep and not a very – well, there were some good plays, and it was – even though it was a four-game sweep, there were some really, really good games in that series, that really long extra inning game that they had. Game three, I think it was, where it went, I think, 15 or 16 innings, 14 innings, longest World Series game in history, I believe. You know, that's not a big ratings grabber. What they, you know, they had a lot of good ratings last year because you had the whole Red Sox-Yankees thing and the Red Sox ending their curse. So that was a big news story. So obviously a lot more people were watching it. And you wonder, you know, and people talk about stuff like this from time to time, and I think it's certainly pretty true of the NBA with their referees because of the nature of the game itself, and I'll get to that in a minute. But you wonder how much there are executives in the television industry who would be perfectly willing to fix a few ball games in order to get a desired result. I mean, that's what happened in 1919. I mean, the Black Sox, there were a lot of gamblers in the game back then, and you know, they paid off the a lot of players on the White Sox to fix the World Series, to throw the World Series. And some people got fairly indicted for that, and some people didn't. You can make a case that Shoeless Joe Jackson, and it was another guy, I forget his name, who probably really didn't do anything. But they wanted to end the stigma of gambling right there. So Kennesaw Mountain, whatever his name was, the first commissioner of baseball, he really put the clamp on that. And baseball still has a stigma about gambling. I mean, that's why Pete Rose isn't in the Hall of Fame, although by virtue of his play on the field, he certainly belongs there. But he was a chronic gambler, and they probably had evidence that he was gambling on his own team while he was managing it. So that's not good. That's not good. And, you know, he kind of sort of came clean, but not really. But anyway, what I really wanted to talk about, not trying to, you know, avoid all the rambling stuff, but what I really wanted to talk about is how, you know, it's possible that these guys may start fixing things. In the NBA, I mentioned that, and I think because of the nature of the game itself, that is, if you have five fouls, you have to sit down. You can't play anymore in that game. I think what they do is they try to make it so that the big stars get fouled less and keep them in the game. And the NBA is all about business, obviously, and it's all about entertainment. And I think the NBA made a very big mistake when they spent too much time marketing on their stars and not on the game itself. Because without the stars, as you've seen, you know, at least the big names that they had back in the 80s and 90s, the Magic Johnsons, Larry Birds, Michael Jordans, and players like that, without those guys now, the NBA is starting to suffer a little bit. And the NHL has always had some serious problems. I mean, I've never heard of a sport losing an entire season over a labor dispute like that. So football really has the best take on all of that. I think of all the professional sports, they really have their act together more than anybody else. But still, you got to think that there are executives out there who would love to see Yankees and Dodgers in every World Series, you know, or Yankees and Mets in every World Series or something like that, just because it's better for their ratings and better for their money. And Fox, in particular, Fox Entertainment, sports and regular entertainment as a whole, while I dislike and distrust their news organization, obviously, I think Fox Sports does a very good job. I like their football coverage. I like their baseball coverage for the most part. Maybe a little too much over-reliance on graphics, but that's okay. I can live with that, and I can deal with that. But realistically speaking, they're having a lot of troubles rating-wise. And if it wasn't for the sports and for American Idol, they would really be not just the number four network, but a very, very distant number four. Last year they were dead last until the series, and they got a huge boost because of the Red Sox Yankees thing. Because, you know, the Yankees started off winning the first three games, and the Red Sox came back to win the next four, which had never happened before in baseball history. But there's a little too many playoffs, and the playoffs are there for a reason. It does upset me because teams like the Braves and teams like the Cardinals, who are really built for the long haul and who have the talent, And even if they don't spend the kind of money the Yankees do, and the Yankees spend far more than anybody else, they still put together a very, very good, solid, competent team. And you know the Braves are going to be back there next year. Maybe not winning divisions, but maybe making it into the playoffs. They've got some very, very good young players, and they've got probably the best farm system in the country. And it's really not fair for a team to go out there and play 162 games and, you know, win their division and get beat by some team that just basically got hot near the end. It's worse in hockey, because in hockey you can get a hot goalie, and you can ride that hot goalie for a long way. So in a short series, anything can happen, and you can make the case that it's just not the better team and stuff like that, but obviously economics plays into it a lot. And Fox, like I was saying, if it wasn't for sports and if it wasn't for American Idol, they would be really, really dead bottom. So this really, really hurts them. And it's kind of a shame, because apart from the new stuff, like I said, I like their entertainment division. I mean, hell, they gave us The Simpsons. You know, I mean, I can forgive a lot for The Simpsons, because The Simpsons are pretty good. Changing the subject slightly, and I've only got about 3 or so minutes left before I got to sign off, about 2.5 minutes left. I wanted to talk a little bit about me personally, because I've been having some thoughts about my future and what I'm going to do now that Kathy's passed away. We had been talking about moving, but it really wasn't very serious talk, because, you know, when you're talking about if you're a single guy moving or you're moving a family, that those are very, very different things. And I don't like moving to begin with. And I always told Kathy that the next place we move to would be the last place we move to. And I'm still kind of that opinion. But the question is, where do I want to go? What do I want to do? I've toyed with the idea of going back to New York City, and I think that would probably be a very bad idea, because I think the job situation is pretty bad up there. A lot depends on, you know, if Ben Birch and the White Rose Society, if they get this this deal going through and I get picked up by him doing that regularly, which, you know, if it goes through for him, it'll go through for me, obviously. But the point is, it's just very important for me to determine what I want to do. And in thinking about that one night, I was thinking to myself that I've lived here in Atlanta for longer than anywhere I've lived in my life, except for New York, where I was born. And I lived in New York for the first 16 years of my life, actually for about the first 14 or 15 years of my life. And I've been here in Atlanta for probably 11 or 12 years. So I've lived here for a very long time. And even though there's a lot of things I don't like about the city and like about how things are run around here, I've gotten comfortable with it. It's kind of like an old shoe, you know, I've gotten used to it. And maybe I'm thinking I should stay here and just fight for things that should be right about Atlanta. I mean, this is a big city, and I'm not generally impressed by cities, but this is a pretty big city, and it's an important city for this region. And if they want to continue to be a player, if they want to continue to be a big city, there are things that are going to have to change. And so I think I'm going to stay here, and I'm going to talk about that, and I've got a nice lengthy article to talk about that in the next show. But I think that's very important, that if you're a big city, you think like a big city. Anyway, I need to go. I need to get out of here, and time is starting to run out. So let me just say goodbye to everybody, and I want to thank again all my friends listening in, and whatever you're listening in, whether it's White Rose or whether it's from the blog or whether it's from your iPod or whether it's on rantradio.com or wnymedia.net. I'm really, really happy to have you guys as listeners, and I'm very happy for my subscribers and all of that. And I'll try to put together a show in the next couple of days. Maybe we'll get my friend Phyllis on or something like that. And I hope you're all doing well, and I hope to talk to you later. Bye.
I want a cup of Joe. I crave a plate of Dave. Oh, in a jar of John. Don't put anything on. I'll chug a jug of George. I'll sip a mug of Doug with the creamer of Steve. How many more does that leave? You'd be a pot of up a pan of Stan, throw in a handful of Dick, that'll do every trick. Open a can of Dan, make a meal of Sam, but don't give me no mo, 'cause what I really want's a cup of Joe.
The Cup of Joe Radio Show has been recorded live at the fabulous Studio Al in Decatur, Georgia, and has been produced by Jove Enterprises, Incorporated. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe radio show, is a production of Mr. and Mrs. Vecchio of Brooklyn, New York.
A plate of Dave, creamer of Steve, a mug of Doug, a cup of...